This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. With just 15 days left before Election Day, tons of focus is turned to candidates and the politicians who are trying to stay in office or win office, to the latest polls and campaign gaffes. During this campaign frenzy, little attention is being paid to a group that plays a pretty big part in everyday politics, lobbyists and special interest groups. It seems just about every leader who takes office, including President Barack Obama and Governor Rick Snyder, comes in promising to clamp down, to peel back the layers that surround dealings between lobbyists, special interest groups, and our elected officials. The results of those promises tend to be, to put it kindly, underwhelming. We got to wondering, how are we doing here in Michigan in terms of the business of lobbying and courting lawmakers in Lansing? Are these dealings as transparent as you, the voter, deserves? Jocelyn Benson is an election law professor at Wayne State University. She founded and directs the Michigan Center for Election Law and Administration, and she's a former Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. Jocelyn, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the Center for Public Integrity, I saw that gave Michigan a grade of F on its corruption risk report card, which might lead one to conclude our state's a little lacking in areas of ethics and transparency. Your thoughts on that F grade?
Yes, unfortunately, I was not surprised. Our state is known nationally almost as the Wild Wild West when it comes to both campaign finance disclosure and lobbying requirements, as well as we're one of the only three states in the country that do not require our elected officials to disclose their personal finances, which is critical to ensure that those we elect to office are not being influenced by their own personal financial interests.
And I saw that after that F grade, the House Democrats jumped in and proposed a package of reform bills. How's that working out for
them? Yes, I was part of that package and helped propose some of the reforms. But unfortunately, we've seen a lot of talk and not a lot of action from the leadership in the House and in the Senate. But, you know, that I think teaches us and history guides us on this as well. Real reform is only going to come when citizens on the ground demand it because the system is not set up to reform itself. There's no interest in, for example, in the lobbying corps in Lansing in promoting more disclosure. But there is interest from the citizens. And so really the only thing that's going to change things is if citizens amplify their voices in pushing for these reforms.
And do you hear that from citizens? Or is it one of those things where I'm worried about making my mortgage payment or I'm worried about whether I can find a job? Whatever, when it comes to lobbyists.
Yes. I mean, there are a lot of things that are pressing all of us these days mm-hmm. and these high unemployment times and all the rest. But at the root of every single issue that we are concerned with as citizens is this question of who's influencing our legislators mm-hmm. and who's influencing our lawmakers. And so having access to that information and regulating that influence is critical to ensuring everything else that we care about moves forward the way that we want it as opposed to the way special interests want it.
Now, lobbying is certainly the influence industry on all levels of our government. And a lobbyist may say his or her role is an educator in teaching lawmakers about the client's view or knowledge of issues. And a lawmaker may say, well, if I meet with a lobbyist, it helps me gather all the information I need to make the right decision. Is that at all a fair argument in your view?
Well, what's critical to our democracy is that our citizenry is informed. And what happens is these meetings that you're talking about, they go on behind closed doors, and citizens who are really in charge in a democracy aren't able to hold our elected officials accountable if we don't even know about who they're meeting with and who's quote-unquote educating them. Now, that aside, apart from that, yes, we certainly want to ensure our lawmakers are informed as well. Mm-hmm. But we want to know that they're being informed and not bribed, at the worst sense, or pushed to vote a certain way in support of financial interests that may be supporting their campaign. And that's why disclosure is so important, because it not only enables us as citizens to know who our lawmakers are meeting with, but it also puts a check on the lawmakers themselves to know, well, I don't want to do this that may be seen as unethical because it's going to be exposed. People will know about it. And I think that will hold back some of the potential unethical behavior that we may see otherwise.
What kind of unethical? Give us some four instances of unethical behavior that has really struck you as egregious, and we really need to fix this.
Well, I think, you know, the story of the bridge, the new international trade crossing over the past several years, and Mattie Maroon's influence over legislators and not bringing the bridge up to a vote and those sorts of mm-hmm. things is one of the most egregious things that we've seen, and it's a continuing saga that seems to go year to year regardless of which party's in office and who's in charge. But that said, we've also seen things like out in West Michigan, we've seen lawmakers switch sides side switch parties and try to recruit shill candidates to run against them to ensure their reelection. Up in northern Michigan, we've seen a large company try to influence local lawmakers who were on the fence as to whether to allow them to build a store in their town up in Ames Township. Mm-hmm. The company essentially ran ads against those who were opposing their store being built in the town, and it made it much more difficult for those lawmakers to stay in office at the local level. So we've seen it at the elected level with big businesses trying to unseat people who don't vote their way, and we've seen it at the legislative level as well, where people are pushed to vote a certain way with a threat of a recall or some other type of pressure if they don't go the way of the wealthy financial interests.
It does strike a civilian, somebody watching from the outside and looking at what's going on in the halls of Lansing and also locally, how any lawmaker who wants to chart a course and keep focused is able to do so with recall threats and the pressures. And as you say, kind of all under the surface, so it's not transparent. How
exactly.
You even get your job done.
Yeah, and it's incredibly discouraging for citizens. I think it's one of the reasons we're seeing a decrease in turnout among citizens every election because we feel less connected to our government. And on the other side, you have very good lawmakers who may go in leading ethics reform or mm-hmm. pushing for more disclosure. But until we actually have that disclosure in place, it doesn't give us the ability to know essentially who's playing the game well in an ethical way and who's not. And that's why, again, disclosure is so important, not just to know the bad things that may be happening so that we can hold those elected officials accountable, but to also know the good things that people are doing behind the scenes that's not disclosed. And that can help restore some of our faith, perhaps, in our elected leaders.
When you say disclosure needs to be allowed, how would you like to see, if you ran the zoo, mm-hmm. how would you like to see this disclosure done and affected?
I think we need three things. First and foremost, every time a lobbyist meets with a legislator or pays for a legislator to do something like go out to lunch or any type of money involving in a conversation with the legislature, that needs to be disclosed immediately. And it should be disclosed on the legislator's website as well as with the Secretary mm-hmm. of State. So more disclosure for lobbying transactions and money spent on lobbying in Michigan is reform number one. Number two, we have to recognize that campaigns and political season also leads to a lot of undisclosed money being spent, not just to influence our elected officials, but to influence the voters as well. So instant disclosure of all money that is going to pay for ads, robocalls, radio communications, mm-hmm. everything also needs to happen, and we don't have that in Michigan. And then third and finally, this personal financial disclosure for legislators. I mean, there's a reason why nearly every other state in the country and our federal government requires that, because if someone has a personal financial interest in what they're voting on, we need to know about it. So those three things, I think, are what we need in Michigan to bring us closer for a more transparent, ethical government.
Which I take it are in that package of reform bills that you helped work on.
They are. And I'm also the head of a coalition called the Michigan Transparency Coalition, seeking other ways. If we can't get change through the legislator, maybe seeking to push for change through a ballot initiative. We've seen many efforts to amend our Constitution this year to do various things. Mm-hmm. Well, I think our Constitution should stand for ethics and transparency. And so we're building a coalition of small business leaders and others who are interested in ensuring that Michigan is a leader, getting A's in our report cards on integrity and public service as opposed to getting an F.
I want to talk a little with you about retired lawmakers becoming lobbyists. I saw a recent Public Citizen report finding there were at least 150 former members of Congress actively lobbying their former colleagues in 2009. Do you have any sense how much that's happening in Lansing?
Yes, we've certainly seen that a lot, this revolving door mm-hmm. of people being term limited out of office mm-hmm. but staying in Lansing as a lobbyist to influence their former colleagues on behalf of a corporation or some other special interest. It's a very significant problem, and it's one that goes, frankly, under the radar a lot because it seems almost sort of technical and all the rest. But yes, we certainly need a law in Michigan to ban this revolving door. That leads to legislators returning as lobbyists the next year. Also, frankly, term limits have exacerbated this problem as well mm-hmm. because it has made that door move more quickly. And you have some very effective lawmakers being pushed out of office and seeking to work and being recruited by lobbying firms for the sole reason that they're good at influencing those who are still in elected office.
And you could kind of see from the former lawmaker's point of view, well, I'm still a player. I still have a reason to walk into the Capitol. I'm still around my former colleagues. So one could see, and I'm being paid probably a lot of money. So I suppose that you can see why that would be attractive.
And the question is, well, what's the problem with that? And to me, the problem is that it's unfair to voters and to organizations or to any interest that doesn't have access to that same level of expertise. It doesn't have access to the same amount of money that can be used to hire a former lawmaker to advocate on their behalf. And that's really, to me, at the end of the day, the biggest problem with all of this. We want our government to be making decisions in light of what's best for the people and everyone in this state. And when we have these types of unfair, unethical, unaccountable mechanisms going on behind the scenes, it ultimately means our government's going to be making more decisions in favor of special interest and less decisions in favor of the people.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty, talking today with Jocelyn Benson, who's a Wayne State University election law professor, and she's the founder and director of the Michigan Center for Election Law and Administration, talking about the need for more transparency in the state of Michigan with dealings between our lawmakers and the folks who are trying to influence them. Jocelyn, increasingly it strikes me that lobbyists are not just influencing legislation. They're helping to write it. Give me your thoughts
on right,
that.
That's right, yes. And again, one of the effects of having term limits and this sort of rapid revolving of legislators in Lansing is that the historical knowledge and the depth of knowledge often comes from those lobbyists who are helping to, quote unquote, educate the new lawmakers. And oftentimes it leads to lawmakers writing the bills or lobbyists writing the bills and others as opposed to the lawmakers and their staff themselves. And that, of course, runs counter to what we want to believe our government is like. We want to believe those who we send to represent us are the ones who are crafting legislation.
But can the reality be that people are voting for bills they haven't read, much less let alone written?
Well, I think that's the case both at the state and federal level, unfortunately. And certainly there's a lot of different reasons why that is, including the way in which bills can move very quickly and can be very detailed. But it's certainly disconcerting to think of the fact that our legislators quite frequently at the state and the federal level, maybe proposing legislation that they have not written, maybe supporting or voting for or against legislation that they've only seen talking points or bullets about. And again, it speaks to the need to have a more active legislator. And frankly, one of the reasons why we don't see that more is because a lot of our legislators have to raise money to run for reelection. Members of Congress and in the State House here in Lansing run every 2 years. And so an unfortunate aspect of our campaign finance system is that the bulk of legislators and candidates' time, or instead of governing, is spent raising money. And as a result, they don't have time to read the bills they may be proposing or voting on.
You know, lobbying certainly is nothing new, that idea of I'll help you and you help me. I mean, Roman senators had their clients, and it was 1876 when lobbyists to Congress first had to register with the clerk. So obviously, even in 1876, people were looking going, I don't know about this. So I guess overall, would you accept that lobbying is part of the democratic process, albeit a not so elegant and rather messy process?
I think in many ways our democracy is not as great as it could be, but I believe it can be better because I believe that the more voices that are in the process, the more conversation, the more dialogue, the more citizens who are involved as lobbyists themselves, the better. And so in that regard, I think it's important to have citizens actively engaged in the process to ensure that they're countering anything that's said to our legislators by special interests, by wealth. The interest. That's really what's critical. I'm certainly not opposed to any corporation, union, individual talking to legislators about their views. I mean, they have complete right to do that, and it's important that our legislators hear those views. What's absent is the views of our citizens. Oftentimes, those voices are not loud enough. And if we're going to have a government of, by, and for the people, we need to ensure that the people have the same amount of time, the same amount of opportunity to influence our legislators as those who have a lot of money have. And we don't have that right now. So I support reforms that essentially help citizens become more engaged, active, and informed, and therefore enabled to be their own lobbyist so as to counter the lobbyists that are already doing quite well in Lansing.
So a citizen in your hopes would be able to get more than a form letter or a form email, template email, when they reach out to a lawmaker.
Yes, and our lawmakers in exchange would be able to spend more time listening to the voices of the citizens as opposed to going out to lunch every day with lobbyists. It's a balance that we need mm-hmm. that's lacking. Mm-hmm. And though throughout time and throughout democracy, yes, there will always be those more wealthy voices, more influential voices, what we need in a democracy is balance and the sort of protection of that one person, one vote principle in every aspect of our government.
So what's the takeaway, in your view, from our discussion for citizens who are listening, who would like to see this change and would like to have more influence? What could an average citizen out there listening do to try to correct this and to push for more transparency?
Well, a number of things. Correspond with your representative, elected official, and find out what they're doing to promote ethical reform and transparency reforms in our government. There are several legislators who have been pushing a lot of these reforms that we've talked about, and it's important that we support them. Now, on the other side of things, though, I do believe that real change will only come through the ballot initiative process. And so mm-hmm. I would encourage citizens to get involved with our coalition. It's the Michigan Transparency Coalition, and we're trying to build support for a constitutional amendment to our Michigan Constitution that would achieve these types of reforms. And the only way we could do that is with help of citizens throughout the state.
And the website for that is?
It's righttoknowmichigan.org, and you can also find us on Facebook. It's just Michigan Transparency Coalition, and we'll be having a series of town halls throughout the state over the next 6 months. So if you like us on our Facebook page, Michigan Transparency Coalition, you can find out about those town halls. Attend them and let us know what you'd like to see, what types of reforms you'd like us to push for in Michigan.
Jocelyn Benson, a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for spending time with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Jocelyn Benson is an election law professor at Wayne State University and is a former Democratic candidate for Secretary of State. An update now on a story that we covered for you here on Stateside, the controversial citizenship box on applications for this November's ballot. Now, these are the forms that you fill out before you get your actual ballot. That's when they ask for your name, address, and date of birth. Secretary of State Ruth Johnson had ordered clerks to put a question on that application asking voters to affirm their U.S. citizenship. But earlier this month, a federal judge ruled that citizenship question is unconstitutional. What happens now? Well, the Secretary of State's office has issued an official bulletin telling local clerks do not use ballot applications that have the citizenship question on them. So local clerks have to decide whether to order all new ballot applications or simply cross out or obscure the question in some way. Now, this only settles the citizenship box question for this election. Secretary Johnson has not ruled out further legal action to try to get that question to be on future elections. So we'll see how this all unfolds.